Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
Having a great number of megacities and city clusters, China commands a unique advantage in sustaining growth and injecting vigor to the world economy, which is yet to recover from the impact of COVID and geopolitical tensions around the world. Hello, I'm Lai Ming, and this is Roundtable. Coming up on today's show, my colleagues Neil Holling and Brandon Yates will discuss the growth potentials arising from and beyond the size of megacities. Now, this is not the first time we talk about megacities and city clusters in this on this show. We begin with a very simple question. What are the criteria that we use commonly to define a city cluster?
Well, to start with, I'd like to talk a little bit about a megacity.
Sure,
because
yeah.
A megacity is a very, very large city, typically with a population of more than 10 million people.
Tiny. Yeah, just a handful of people.
That is not the standard just for China, because we know China is a populous country.
Yeah.
It's the standard around the world. And actually, if we talk about people living in cities, China has urbanized with a really unbelievable speed. About 20 years ago, only 30% of the Chinese population lived in cities. And today, it's over 66%.
I think those figures are more need to be reported on more than the fact that we have so many megacities in China. The fact that it's urbanized so quickly, you know, I mean, mathematically it makes sense that China has the most megacities just because, like you said, of the massive population. But the urbanization and the speed at which it's happened is phenomenal. I don't think we've ever seen something like this in history.
Indeed, it's actually very fast because roughly 400 million people, that is more than the entire U.S. population, moved to China's cities in the past two decades.
That's incredibly fast.
Take a look at the number, you would see that the same proportion transition took 90 years to happen in the Europe and 60 years in the US. And this migration isn't just over. Actually, by 2035, it is expected that 70% of China's population is going to be living in cities. And with this mega city idea, actually a city cluster would be the kind of
The next step.
The next step, yes. So with a
bring other cities along, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of like having a major city as a core, or a mega city, or a really big city at the core, and having other cities, counties, locating adjacent to the major city.
And which will probably lead to faster development for those areas.
That's the idea.
Yeah. So one keyword you mentioned earlier, I mean, urbanization rate that took place in the past few decades here in China, it was one of the strategies for China to promote economic growth in this country, because we know urban areas are much more productive than rural areas, given the concentrations of people and the streamlining of resources and allocation of resources. And as such, we can expect a higher growth rate as compared to people perhaps a lesser level of urbanization. Again, and the other thing is mega city. The key word is mega city, and that means cities with population above 10 million. And there are only a few dozens of cities like that around the world. According to macrotrend.net, there are 35 cities with a population over 10 million in the world in 2024, from Tokyo to Seoul. Among them, both China and India has 6 cities on the list.
Which is to be expected, considering both countries' massive populations.
Yeah, the sheer size of the country's population certainly makes sense to have that many number of cities as megacities with a population more than 10 million. But coincidentally, South Africa has a city that qualifies as a megacity as well.
Yeah, it's Johannesburg, isn't it? Or if I'm not mistaken, it is Johannesburg, right? Which is also what's interesting about Johannesburg in South Africa is that it's not necessarily one of the most sought-after cities in terms of international tourism and even South Africans themselves. A lot of them tend to flock to Johannesburg because that is where most of the tech is booming, where industry is booming, where people, it's viewed as the city where people go to kind of create, you know, a future for themselves and, you know, to financially prosper and that kind of thing. But with that development, we've also seen the development of other cities around South Africa, particularly my home city, Cape Town, where a lot of people that have become successful in Johannesburg, they also spend a lot of time and a lot of the money that they've made in Cape Town, because it really is a beautiful scenic city. And people naturally want to flock there just for the, you know, the lifestyle that it provides. So I guess it also kind of lends back to what we were discussing earlier, where when one city develops and becomes urbanized and, you know, is at the forefront of tech and, you know, transport and all of those sorts of things, it can lead to development in other areas that are nearby that mega city.
So city clusters are not a concept unique to China. It actually makes sense for economies around the world to try and develop and expand. Brandon, you mentioned tech, industry, transportation. Are these the characteristic of or mega city in the form of Johannesburg in South Africa?
Yeah, I would say so. But just with regards to Johannesburg, historically, it has always been at the forefront of whatever industry is thriving in South Africa during a certain time period. So I think at the moment, Johannesburg is leading the way, I would say, in terms of business, finance, and anything that is technologically advancing in South Africa. Look, it's not without its problems. There's still poverty, and you know, Johannesburg probably has one of the highest crime rates in South Africa, unfortunately. But just looking at it in terms of being at the forefront of where South Africa can go to in terms of those areas of development that we've discussed, I would say Johannesburg is definitely leading the way in that sense. And generally, people that are wanting to advance in a certain industry or wanting to take some sort of new concept to the next level, they generally flock to Johannesburg.
I see. So internationally, mega cities and city clusters, they should have their own characteristics. For instance, in the Yangtze River Delta region surrounding the city of Shanghai, there are enterprises of chips, software, batteries, electric motor controls, etc. So a new energy car enterprise can get all the parts within a four-hour drive, which is the effect and the result of having so many industries clustered together. And how many cities clusters are there like in the Yangtze River Delta region?
Well, actually, when it comes to city clusters, we do have a different way of calculating them, because we only talked about megacities and the cities surrounding megacity forming a major city clusters. Mm-hmm. But actually, there are different ones. We also have relatively medium-sized city clusters, mm-hmm. and also small city clusters. So in total, in China, actually, there are 19 different city clusters that is defined as city clusters,
sure.
And if we take a look at the situation of the bigger ones, actually five regions with as many as 100 million people would consider as the mega city clusters. And with the expanding of access to urban opportunities without overwhelming the cities in the center. And when we talk about major city clusters, one very interesting example would be the Yangtze River Delta region that Lai Ming has mentioned. According to statistics, the number of patent authorizations in the 19 major city clusters in China has accounted for more than 80% of the national total in recent years. And the Yangtze River Delta region has an example that is, it generates nearly a quarter of the country's total economic output with less than 4% of the land area. So yes, developing cities or developing megacities into city clusters would very efficiently help the development of that region.
Mm-hmm. And the country as a whole, it sounds like.
Yes, and since Lai Ming has mentioned the example of this area and Shanghai, actually Shanghai has tried to position itself as a hub for biotech and chip manufacturing by offering companies different types of incentives to open plants there. But several nearby cities have launched almost identical plans, and China is betting that more regional coordination will lead to more efficient investments nationwide, and that cooperation could also help alleviate overpopulation, pollution, which might be problematic in the future for these megacities. So I think though Shanghai is in the area of the Changsanjiao Diqu, that's the Yangtze River Delta region we talked about, actually it is all both benefiting and getting benefited from other cities in that region.
When we look at megacities and city clusters, when you think about China and other countries in the rest of the world, like I'm thinking of South Africa right now, I think scale also needs to be put into perspective, because sometimes the distance between some of the megacities that we've discussed and other clusters that are nearby, in China, the distance might be considered relatively nearby just because of how large China's landmass is. But in South Africa, for example, most people consider the distance between Johannesburg and Cape Town to be a really large distance. But if you, and you know, I mean, we've got a population of probably around 60 million. So to compare that to, example, China, I mean, it's not even on the same playing field. So I think that's also something interesting to consider globally, because we might not consider Johannesburg and Cape Town to be a megacity cluster, but in China, for example, just because of the sheer size and population size of China, that might be a little bit different. So that's also something unique to consider, I think, when it comes to China, just because of the scale and population size of China.
Megacities and city clusters, they have their own origins, for instance, historical reasons or historical legacies or natural endowments. For instance, traditionally in Northeast China, the industrial base was pretty strong at the very beginning of the start of the Republic, the People's Republic of China. The country depended a lot on that region to develop in terms of the heavy industry. So as such, we could say that there used to be a city cluster in that part of the country, but then things would change and things like resources can be depleted, industries can upgrade and transform, and also tech development can make things that previously didn't exist take place as well. For instance, in you mentioned Johannesburg and Cape Town could be rather far apart from each other. That could happen in older times before we had better infrastructure. But now with good investment into infrastructure and transportation, now we can afford to have a city cluster built based on cities that may look physically rather apart, but they are connected with strong facilities.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, I do think the city we're living in currently, Beijing, is a good example, because there is the Beijing Tianjin Hebei circle that is also considered a city cluster. And if you live in Tianjin, for example, currently, to support the 100,000 daily commuters between Beijing and Tianjin, about 150 high-speed trains are running every day, as often as 3 minutes apart. That means if you are living in Tianjin and want to enjoy a little resource that is relatively concentrated in the country's capital, that is Beijing, you can get to Beijing in a very fast speed. And that is one perk that developing city clusters instead of just developing megacities could offer. That is for people who live in the relatively outskirt of the main core city in the city cluster.
Accessibility becomes easier.
Yes. Yeah. So I think what Lai Ming has said makes a lot of sense. That is infrastructure in terms of transportation, in terms of
critical
accessibilities, in online accessibilities as well, and also managing the city in a smarter way. I'm talking about e-governance of cities would also help quite so much.
Yeah. These people that, I think you said it was 1,000 people that travel from Tianjin to Beijing on a daily basis.
100,000.
100,000. That's incredible. It makes me feel so lazy. I mean, I sometimes struggle to find the energy to get onto the subway to get to the city center, which probably takes like 30 to 40 minutes. So that's an incredible effort from people going from Tianjin to Beijing on a daily basis. But also, it, like we've already mentioned, it is incredibly remarkable that level of accessibility and that level of infrastructure and transport is available to these people. It's phenomenal.
And there are many factors at play here. And we mentioned population and resource endowment, historical legacies, infrastructure. There's also industrial complementarity, if that's even a word. And then political cohesion in terms of policies and design to facilitate collaboration and promote synergy. Many factors at play here. They often add on to each other. They often interact. For instance, the Yangtze River Delta region historically was a place that was densely populated ever since the Southern Sun Dynasty, more than 1,000 years ago. The economic gravity of the entire country here in China has shifted to southern China. As such, Songjiang, which is the older name for Shanghai, the region, was known for its weaving industry. A lot of home-based weaving, we'll call them workshops, really sustain the economy. And as such, and then at the start of the 20th century, it was a port that was open to international traders and international foreigners. As such, it quickly became a base for financial institutions and industries. So there are historical reasons. There are different factors really affecting each other.
Yeah, same in South Africa, where historical requirements and certain industries that were popular or made a certain city a base that kind of led to the growth of a certain city or area, and that is kind of meant, it doesn't go back as far as 1,000 years, for example, but it's a very similar trajectory in terms of how certain industries shape the growth and development of certain cities or regions.
Historical resources is definitely a very important factor.
Yes.
In the meantime, actually, the current development of these city clusters is also quite important. For example, Yangtze River Delta city clusters we talked about actually host the largest number of top-tier companies and 1/4 of the nation's leading universities, which makes the place quite an attraction for young talents.
You said, it's changed from compared to what it was in history.
Yes,
so it's fascinating
yes.
to watch that progression, to see how certain
the
cities
transition.
Or regions... how historical factors played a role to... it becoming a hub for a certain reason, and then you look at the current situation now, and then you see how it's still a hub, but the reasons that it's a hub have changed. And that's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and I think Limey has asked this question, that's how many cities are there in this region? Actually, there are 26 cities, and I believe many of the cities are quite well known, even for people outside of China. You see Zhejiang, Jiangsu, Anhui, Shanghai, and all these cities are quite well-known cities. Yes, provinces as well. Thank you. So many different cities. As Nanjing, Suzhou, Hangzhou, Ningbo. These are among the major cities that you should be knowing about. And in the meantime, when it comes to China as a huge country, one definite perk is the industrial, let's say, link that it has, or industrial line. China is actually the only country that possesses all the industrial categories in the United Nations industrial classification, which allows firms to source goods relatively easier. And I know it's for some smaller countries, I think the size as well as population of one province in China basically is sometimes equal to smaller countries, which...
literally a smaller country's entire population.
Which makes an industry find it relatively easier to find its upper stream industries as well as lower stream industries within just the country.
This is good if China is the only economy in the world. But I think having a complete set of industry really makes it efficient to produce stuff and at a lower cost. And this is certainly beneficial to its own citizens. But what about having... I mean, what's the strength of having these city clusters and having a full set of industry departments? How is it going to benefit the world economy at large?
Well, for one thing, having an entire industry of major companies located in one region would definitely lower the cost of the product of the industry so that it can export better and less pricey product to the world, for sure. And on the other hand, on top of being economically making sense, actually, another reason that I think developing city clusters would be a really good idea is because it's also economically quite works very well.
Beneficial,
Yes, I have an example about a place that Lai Ming has actually visited. That is the Taihu Lake.
Sure, yeah.
Yes, it is. Actually, in springtime, Taihu Lake faces an environmental crisis, or it faced an environmental crisis due to blue-green algae blooms, and it negatively impacted local fishing, tourism, and the health of millions in the Yangtze River Delta.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just the look of it and the smell, and it's terrible.
Yes, the smell is terrible. And actually, in 2007, there has been a severe outbreak in the place of Wuxi, that is a city by the lake, without drinking water for a week, highlighting the urgency of addressing the issue. But the problem with that issue is that a lot of cities are near the Taihu area, and other than working together, it is hard for them to find a better way to deal with this issue, and which is why these several cities decided to, well, previously they've made individual efforts to address the bloom in the past, but what they need to do is to work together and to help each other out. Wuxi on the lake's northern area and Huzhou on the southern area have started sharing remote sensing data and using drones to automatic boats to monitor the water surface together. And the cities are affected at different times of the year, Wuxi in the summer and Huzhou in the fall, which is why the team in Huzhou can send a fleet of boats to assist colleagues in Wuxi when it gets hit, and Wuxi will return the favor later.
Do you see what's possible when we work together, folks? That's not just a message for Chinese cities and clusters, but it's a global message. We work together, we can find solutions quickly and efficiently, and that was an outstanding example.
And this is an example for political cohesion in this sense.
I mean, yes.
Because we can't really afford to take city clusters and megacities for granted, because without the proper policy to guide it, it's not rare to see an example of maybe a megacity sucking the air out of the region, attracting talent and resources from nearby cities, and leaving these cities empowered, in fact, in some cases. So I think really it's important for those making the decisions to sit down, talk together, and come up with a memorandum of understanding.
Yes, that happened actually in the year of 2020. And last year, we see hundreds of different species of birds nesting and flying around in the Taihu area, suggesting that the environment is definitely in a really good state.
Mm-hmm. And going forward, there's still a lot to do in terms of urbanization and building megacities and city clusters in this country. We're now standing at urbanization rate about 66%. And if there's any reference from developed countries in the world, most likely we're looking at urbanization rate at around 80%. So in terms of the sheer number of the percentage point, there is still much room to go. And under the guise of this sheer number of percentage points, there are areas where we can do to improve the living conditions, living standards, improve the services. A few weeks ago, we talked about how certain cities in this country are building pocket pucks to try and improve the living environment for residents living in these big cities. What more can we do with regard to this? And you know, even for city clusters built on an industry conglomeration, there's the likelihood of, for instance, the depletion of resources and the transformation and upgrading of industries.
In order for people to live in the relatively outskirts cities in the city clusters, one thing for sure would be a more convenient transportation system. And that is why, according to plan, China will be home to 200,000 kilometers of railways by 2035. One third of them will be high-speed railways, which will account for about 60% of the total distance covered by all the high-speed rail lines in the world by that time. And with this, actually, cities can link closer together, and we have a plan to, quote, I'm quoting, get around a city within 1 hour, get around a city cluster within 2 hours, and make a trip between city clusters within 3 hours.
Yeah, and that way a cluster can literally become a part of the major megacity instantly, just because of the convenience of that accessibility.
Yes, and also we are building a digital highway in a certain sense. That is, previously, if your hukou, that's your identification register, home register system, is in one province, and you need to use it in a different province, it would be relatively hard. You need to run a lot of errands. But now with digital governance in place, it's much easier.
And we talked rather excitedly about the prospect of economy and growth. There's also the element of culture that we would like to see results on, and how cities can come together and build a different culture that's different from a nearby region. You're listening to Roundtable. Also on the show today, are you familiar with the concept of a 50-50 couple who make a point of splitting all their bills equally? Do you practice that with your spouse? Do you split the bills equally between the family?